Hey everybody, welcome back to season 4 of Highly Unlikely with Josh and Janae. And we're excited that you're joining us. And we prayed for you before this episode that this message would not just be words from people, but it would go further in your heart and would impact you in some way. So I'm really excited about our guests today because this is a couple that we don't actually know super well, but have had some interactions with and actually have heard a lot about because you guys have had an impact. You've been impacted in your own lives and then you've made an impact on people's lives. Mm-hmm. So that's Ryan and Rachel Jungling. And we're thankful that you guys are here. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
And we're going to break the ice with an icebreaker. Break the ice with an icebreaker.
Oh. What's the most embarrassing thing that has happened to you recently?
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
I got to think about this.
Okay, but, what if it's like really embarrassing to actually share?
I got it.
Okay. Yeah, so, let's go.
Daughter Linnea just had her preschool graduation, and I was holding our son Abe, and we're like sitting in the church during the graduation, and I just fed him.
He's 2 months old at this point.
I just had fed him, and I was burping him. And he had just this massive spit up and it just went all over the front of my pants.
Yes.
Like all over.
It wasn't all over. It was just
right in the area. Right in the area. I just like, I can't put this baby down now. I need everybody to know. So I looked at my dad who was sitting next to me and he was just like, just like wide eyed. Like, oh boy. That's a good one.
That's a great one.
It's a really great one.
Yeah.
I'm on. Do you have one?
I'm trying to think.
Mine's actually embarrassing to say.
Are you going to say it?
I am. I accidentally farted in front of someone recently. And I was like, oh my gosh, where you couldn't control it. And I told him at the end of the day, I was like, I'm getting old. Because I'd have those patients.
They're sneaking out now.
Yes.
Wow, yeah. Thank you for being vulnerable.
It was out of my control. I don't know. So yeah, I feel compassion towards those old patients of mine that it just came out and there it is. Just real person.
And life went on.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's like awful. I don't think the other person heard though, which I'm really grateful.
Yeah. Maybe they did and they're just very
kind. Maybe they
did
and they just love me. Yeah.
I feel like there was something I was embarrassed about recently that I was thinking about, but I just cannot.
If you think of it, you have to say it in the next 30 minutes. Deal?
I mean, I have one, but I don't even know if I should share it.
Do it! Do it!
I mean, I don't mean to make... Whatever, here we are, highly unlikely.
Josh's vein in his forehead comes out when he's embarrassed.
We literally... And this was a couple weeks ago when I was preaching in church, and we were talking about sex.
We were?
I was in a message because maybe it's because I preached.
Wait, was it when we were up there together?
Yeah.
I have a video of it.
I'm sorry if this, like, we don't know each other that well.
This is a great one.
But I, like, used the word.
You were talking about exalting Christ.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe we're sharing this.
He's like,
I said, we don't want to be erecting idols. And as my hand was in the air, I was like,
wrong topic.
And sure enough, like after the service, people were like,
you did a beautiful job of moving on. Because if you would have paused, people would have went there.
It was a serious moment. And I was I can't own this right now. I have to just power through and act like they're all immature and keep going.
I do have a screen recording of it.
It was embarrassing because I feel hot in my face right now.
And I feel like on the way in, I saw to watch previous sermons.
Yeah, right. Right. So exactly. If you want to watch it back, you just guess which one it
was. Maybe the team loves you enough to not let that be recorded that was out there.
He'll show up at the Christmas party in the reels.
Oh, man. Sorry. How about you, Rachel?
These are all so good. I wasn't like sitting thinking of mine. I was just listening to yours. Those are pretty great.
You're not forced to answer.
Yeah.
If I had one come to me, I would say it. And I can't think of one right now, but trust me, I do embarrassing stuff all the time. And I'm also like not that easily embarrassed. I'm like, oh, well.
Right.
Moving on. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's great.
I shall say it if I think of
yeah,
one.
Yeah, if you think
because
of it.
Because I am not above embarrassing things.
I just feel like there's something with moms and there's the things that happen to you all the time and the process of birthing a child that probably just takes some of the embarrassment out of your life.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, that's a real thing.
You guys, we were having Avery. I'll just never forget. I was like, there are five people from the church in here right
now. It literally was like Jenny was pushing and people were like, Pastor Josh, like nurses and stuff that are coming in. I was like,
oh, good Lord, never the same.
This is so weird.
But you don't care.
Sorry. Anyways.
That was a fun question.
That is not the focal point of today.
No.
So, mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of things that we're excited to talk with you guys about. And just talking about relationships this season. And there's been things you've been through in your life and transitions that you've taken on recently and impacts that you've had that we would just love, number one, for you to be able to share, because I think it's going to help and bless people as you share your own testimony. And also, I think some of the stuff that you're doing and have done is impactful and people should know about it. So we want to give you a little opportunity to just like say what that is and share about it in a few moments. But why don't you bring us back to like the starting point of where a lot of what we're going to get to kind of launched from.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And tell everybody like
your kids' names. Your families. Yeah. Your family.
And like who you are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm Ryan Jungling, and it's my wife, Rachel, and we met when we were in college at UND.
Yes.
Oh, man, I'm the one bison.
She's so happy.
in an education class, and we student taught in the same school, which was pretty cool. I got to have lunch together, and so we both moved out to Bismarck Mandan and back in 2010. And we were like trying to have a family after like a year, 2 years. We weren't like actively trying not to have a family, but you know, first couple years of marriage, and then when we started to try to have a family, we really had some pretty significant struggles with that. Mm-hmm. We walked through infertility for 7 years.
This is from like your early 20s to your late 20s.
Yeah.
I was 30 when I had the twins. So
Okay. Wow.
And we got married when we were just turned 22.
Yeah.
It took a while. It was, you know, months turned into years, and it was like 7 years of waiting. You know, everybody just saying, this is going to be the month. You know, like, okay. But that really prepared us for later. Mm-hmm. But you want to keep going with?
Yeah, you know, we're teachers, and you get all of the costs that come with infertility, and all the time away from school for Rachel, and it was really a challenged both of our faiths, I think, quite a bit. Like, really have to when you walk through something difficult, right? Then at least, you know, my faith was like, okay, God, well, why? Like I asked a lot of why questions at the time.
Right.
Why this? And then in 2017, Rachel got pregnant. And in January of 2018, we had twins. And Linnea and Anders, they were born, 34 weeks? Spent about 20 days in the NICU, and then they like, you know, they're on monitors in the NICU, 24-hour, you know, like these really skilled people that are watching every move, all the monitors, and then they unplug them and they hand them to you, and they're like, good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're like, we have two that we don't, you know, we're not the experts here. You guys are the experts.
Right.
But so then we had life with twins.
So I know we spent some time in the NICU, not as long as you guys by any means, but I mean, I remember bringing was our third child home in that first week, you know, because we brought her
home. Our third child was our only non-NICU child.
Yes, we brought her home after 3 days. And at the end of the week, I was like, why is this so hard? And she's like, well, because with the other kids.
The nurses sleep trained them. They like had them on a schedule. We're like, this is what parenting really is. Oh my goodness.
But I don't want to move like past infertility too quickly because I know there's a lot of people. Like I just talked to so many couples that are walking through that to some degree. Like maybe they've just been trying to get pregnant for like 3 months and they're like, oh, is something going on? You know, or maybe it's been years. I have friends, it's been, you know, almost a decade. And I just think of that, like, I know part of the initial frustration or like disappointment is comments people make, you know, but also just like that month to month, like hopes up, disappointment, hopes up, disappointment to kind of like maybe not even feeling anymore a little bit. And how, when you guys talk to people today who are maybe walking through the initial part of that journey, what do you say? How do you encourage them? Or
it's hard to know what to say. It's just it's just hard. But something I just remember constantly praying, like, if it's your will, let it be this month. And then also just constantly praying, like, I just don't want to be bitter, God. I just don't want to be one of those people that's so bitter if I never have kids, or, you know, if I grow, you know, if we grow our family in a different way. You know, I just didn't want to be bitter about that, which I don't know. That was helpful. I thought,
guarding your heart, in a healthy way.
And that was really encouraging to me, to see Rachel like live that out, because that was, you know, I generally a pretty like, it's going to be all right. Everything's and just kind of who I am as a person, and to go through that struggle, like it just like got really heavy, and it was just like, God, what is this? And, you know, and like we each were teachers at the time, and, you know, we each had students that would get pregnant and like, What about us? Like, what about us? And so to see Rachel, like I saw that every day, like that prayer, just like that she would not be bitter. And that really encouraged me, like, okay, like there's a bigger purpose to this. There's something deeper.
Something else, when I was dealing with that, I remember doing a Bible study, and they encourage you to do like a time inventory. Like, here's your week. And then, what are you spending all your hours on? And then it was like, can you carve out just 1 hour a week for something you're passionate about, like for, you know, kind of for the Lord? And I just had to laugh. I was like, 1 hour? I have so many hours I don't know what to do with. So, and meanwhile, the people around me were actually like, I don't know if I have an hour. The kids have all these things, and like, I have all these hours. But I ended up like, practicing English with a refugee, and it was so wonderful. It was really just gave some perspective to, like, here she's, you know, just came over to the United States, and she's got this little, you know, 3-year-old and a baby, and can't drive anywhere because she doesn't have her license yet. So she's just stuck at home, trying to make the best of that. And I don't know, just, it's nice when you're not only looking at and thinking about your own problems in your own world, but when you're, you know, thinking about others and what they might need, or, you know, what you could do.
Good for you. Cause that is so hard to do, but so important, I think, you know, to like keep that outward focus and love people in the midst of like the struggle and the difficulty. That's so hard. And you see people not do that, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's huge.
We also watched a lot of movies.
Yes.
So, so you walked in that journey, and we might come back
to
that.
So when did you have the twins?
January of 2018.
Okay.
The very end.
I feel like there's a theme too. Sorry, I was going to say this, but there's a theme of like when you walk through things, it's so easy to like analyze everybody else around you, you know? And like, I just remember that, like, I had lung surgery when I was in like my 20s. And I remember being on this floor with all these like heart patients that were in their 80s, you know, and and just watching all the other healthy young people around me being like, Lord, yeah. like what right. in the world, you know? And mm-hmm. that, I feel like that's such a challenge for people when you walk through difficulty too. It's like when you're shopping for a certain kind of car, every time you pass one on the road, you notice it. Right. And when you're walking through yeah. something that's difficult, so yeah. every time you notice somebody who didn't have to walk through that, it's
yeah.
like
yeah.
you can just totally get your attention on that, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting that you mentioned that. But so mm-hmm. tell us about the twins and like yeah. finding out about them and then yeah. them arriving.
Yeah. Oh man, they're so great. We did IVF and, you know, nothing had worked for years. And we tried it earlier with just one embryo and it didn't work. And then it was like 100% of things have not worked. Just put two in, like, sure. Mm. And then it worked and it was just like, what? Yeah. For real? And it's also kind of, I had pictured this like magical moment and it was, right. you know, Pinterest was just like being invented, you know, now I feel right. super old, but, like that you see everybody telling people in different ways and different, and it was, we were just like walking in Shields and the nurse called us and was like, you're pregnant. And I was like, I didn't want to be in Shields. And okay, great. Thank you. That was not the first reaction, but anyway.
We were really at the end of our like emotional rope.
Yeah.
For IVF. It was like, we were done. Like
yeah.
when we were walking into Shields, we had a plan of what was going to happen if they called.
They told us they were going to call that day. It wasn't, yeah, it like, was not Shields related.
When they called that day, we had a plan for what was going to happen when they said another test has, there's no life.
A friendly yeah. breakup. Like, we still really love you, even though we're right. not going to.
But we're done.
Go see yeah. you. And, you know.
And then it was like, you're very pregnant. And we're like, you know, walking around Shields.
Yeah. Very pregnant. What does that mean? You
know? How pregnant can one be?
The numbers were just high. And then it turned out to be twins. And and then I remember the ultrasound, seeing if they're boys or girls or what, you know. They told us Anders is a boy. And then they just waited for like half an hour before they told us that Linnea was the girl. It's like, what's going on? He is very suspenseful. And then that was really fun. Just it. And that was exciting.
For sure.
And they were a lot of fun. I kept, like, when we had them, I just thought, this is just so much more fun than I thought it was going to be. Mm. And, you know, people, you know, make comments and it, like I probably do now, you know, about kids like, oh, this is kind of a lot of work, or this is, you guys are really noisy, or, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I every night we would just be like, it's so fun that they're here, and it's so fun that there's two. Yeah. And we would say that all the time. Like, it's so fun that,
When we talk to people, when we were pregnant and we would talk to people, people would be like, I don't know how you're going to do it. Mm. Like, everybody would pretty much say that didn't imagine. Have twins. Mm. But everybody that had twins said, you're going to love it. And so that was true.
They were right. Yeah. Like, turns
it
out.
It was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you ever say, you don't know how long I waited for this though? Yeah. It's like, how did that feel after so long? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Just what was that feeling like?
Just joyous. Like, we right. were so mm-hmm. happy.
Yeah.
It was so happy. Like that whole time. And, and you get, with infertility, you get really good at just not saying things when people say comments that are like,
right. Oh,
they probably are only trying to make me feel better, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But no, it was just really fun.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you walk through the grief of infertility, which is a real grief mm-hmm. that people walk through. And even the loss of that of like, okay, is this going to be a part of my life? You know?
Yeah.
But then there's another day. So talk about the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That came later.
Yeah. So so we were both teaching. And we had in the, because of our infertility journey, like we didn't have a spot reserved at some daycare for years.
Right.
Like we knew people that would do that.
Yeah.
Like reserve the spot before they got married or right when they get married or whatever. Yeah. And we never did that. And so we spent our kind of spring looking for, okay, now we have to find daycare.
Yeah. What are we
going to
do?
For two.
And for two infants. Yeah.
And we kind of spent all our money on getting them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, for years. So
was, yes.
Yeah.
And so we, so we ended up finding a daycare, interviewed the provider and in-home daycare, and planned to send the twins when we went back to work in the fall of 2018. And Rachel worked a little bit in the spring, but her mom came down and took care of the twins during that time, that couple weeks. And so in the fall, we started taking the twins to daycare. And then in January of 2019, it was January 10th, Rachel took Anders and Linnea to daycare. I'll let her tell.
They're, you know, like a couple weeks away from turning one, and they couldn't, it's not like I could take him out and walk them in yet.
Yeah.
And it was January and it was so, so cold. And so I would just carry them in. And I just remember constantly thinking, like, I can't, like, my arms can't do this much longer. They're so big, you know. Yes. But I brought them both in and I set them down. And then I took Linnea out. And then usually the daycare provider would, sometimes she would help take them out and grab them, you know, when they, like, got out of their car seats. And then we were both just there, like, kind of kneeling down together. And I think I told her, like, you know, when they ate or something. And then I just turned around and left. And I was like, bye, buddy, you know, to Anders.
Like, as and Anders was still in the car seat.
He was in the car seat. Right? And I just took Linnea out. And she was, like, over it. Like, she was going to take him out. But she didn't. And then a couple hours later, I was at work. And I got a call. And it was from the police. And they kept asking me if I was sitting down. And I, you know, eventually they said something happened to your son at daycare. And then they had said that he was at the hospital. And I was like, oh, good. He's at the hospital. He's going to be fine. And, but he wasn't. And what happened is that he wasn't taken out of the car seat, and his head kind of would dip forward. And then, because the car seat was on the floor and not in a base of a car or a stroller or something like that, it's not at the right angle. So it, like, cut off his breathing and he suffocated. He was flown to Fargo. He never woke up, but a couple days later, then he died. But that was it. Do you have anything else?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I remember asking you, like, man, because that's one of the things, just as a parent, I'm like, I don't know how people, how do you keep going? Like, you know, and I think I asked you when I first met you, like, how did you get through, you know? And I remember one of the things you said is, and you can tell your experience from that day too, but you pulled up to the hospital and I think you said one of the pastors from your church pulled up, like, right at the same time.
Yeah.
Why don't you just tell?
Yeah, from that moment, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of just what happened.
So I, you know, it was like 10 o'clock, somewhere around 10 o'clock, Rachel, 10, 12, 10, 10, something like that.
Class started at 10, 11, and the bell, like, just rang. Yeah.
And I was sitting in my classroom in Mandan, and I got a call from Rachel, and we had just talked about our schedules. So we could contact each other, like, just kind of revisited it.
Yeah.
And I knew it was weird when I saw that she was calling. I was like, this is weird. I think she has class. And and she just said, something happened to Anders. You need to get to the hospital. And then she told me the hospital that wasn't where we took him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, that's really weird. But jumped in the car and drove, and on my way, the first person I called was one of our pastors. And, like, my parents live in town. I could have called them, but he came to mind.
Yeah.
And I called him, and he was out driving in Bismarck, and he said, I'll meet you there. And as I pulled up to the stoplight, I saw his stocking cap in the car in front of me.
Yeah.
And he pulled into the parking lot at the exact same time I did. And, yeah, he didn't leave our side He drove us to Fargo. He stayed with us. He drove us back on Sunday. He was there the entire time. And that was a really, for me, that was huge. Just to have somebody there that was present, that had walked through this with other people, had, like, he knew when he could tell her parents, like, hey, they need some time. He knew what to say to them, what to say to our siblings, what to ask the doctors that we didn't, like, and he just prayed for us, and we read a lot of scripture, and that was huge. It was, we were not alone, and we felt that from the very beginning.
Yeah. It seems like you guys have a lot of community, like you just have good people around you, which I'm sure has been a huge part of any journey that you've been on, just having the right people. I remember you telling me that story and saying when he pulled up, you said something like, it was just God's way of saying, like, hey, I'm with you, even in the midst of this, right? Or something.
For sure. I got into the emergency room, and Rachel was like, you know, those times where you look back and like things just seem different than they probably were.
Yeah.
Right. Like when I walked into the emergency room, it looked like Rachel was like 10 miles away. It was probably like 20 feet, but it seemed like it took forever. And there was like a detective there, and I was like we're in the emergency room, and I got a text from my Bible study leader, and it was just like, somebody needs to hear this today. And it was the verse of the day, which was James 1:5. He's like, somebody needs to hear this today. And it was like right at the point where I was going to send out a text, like, we need prayers. And I just responded something like, it's us. It's Anders. And it was like instantaneous. It was, so there were a number of things like right away where it was like, we are not alone. Like God is here. God is present. God is active. And so that the impact that had, just can't even describe it.
Yeah.
So you spoke from like your infertility journey. I think you said this, saying like, God, why? So how did that play out now? You have the joy of these babies. And what did it, what did your faith look like? What did your relationship with the Lord, your relationship with each other through 7 years of grief in that way, and then losing a child? Just what was the process? Like, you definitely went through a process or a trial and a testing in both of those relationships. So what did that look like for you guys?
I thought something, I forgot.
You want me to jump in?
Yeah, I just lost it.
I think part of it, for whatever reason, I don't think I've asked that why question. With Anders. Like, it's just like we had, during infertility, it was like we got to a point where it was just like, God, whatever your will is, like that, it, we're just going to trust it. And I think a big part of it was all of the things, like Pastor Paul's presence, text messages from people that, and because that was, it wasn't just one incident. There were a few over those 3 days that we were in the hospital, and just like, I didn't ask those questions. Like, I don't want to go through this. This is really hard. But God, how are you going to use it?
Right.
And that's, you know, pretty incredible to be able to experience, to feel that, because it was definitely not like, I wasn't choosing that.
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit was working, and God was moving.
It felt like with infertility, it was just hammered into us over and over again that God is the author of life, that, you know, with IVF, you could put everything together at the right place at the right time, and it doesn't equal a baby, you know?
Yeah.
And so we were just very familiar with not being in charge and not being in control. And I think people often say that losing a child is the hardest thing that you could go through. And sometimes I think that infertility was harder. Mm. And I know people might not believe that, but right. That was really hard. And it prepared us for just like, once again, we're not really in control. You know, we're not really in charge of everything.
You know, we talked about how, like, when you're in those situations, you can look at why'd this happen to us? You know, everybody else is just going about their everyday life. But I think when because I sit with you guys, and I remember the first time we met, and even just sitting with you now, Rachel, I'm like, man, there's just a different spirit about these people. Like, there's a positivity, and there's, like, a steadfastness and a hope. And I think, I mean, I just commend you for that, because it's pretty amazing when you're describing. You could be in a totally different state right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in sharing about these things. And, but I think part of that is just you've chosen to rehearse, but here's where God was present, you know, or rather than looking at the whys or the what ifs and just saying, I know there's weak moments, you know, I'm sure, but choosing to say, like, no, the Lord encouraged me here and he helped me there and he picked me up over here. And I think that's, I'm kind of, presuming, but I'm that's probably why you have the spirit about you that you have today, even through all this.
Yeah. That's exactly what I want to talk about all the time. You know, when people bring up the hard things, I'm like, but there were so many things where it was so clear, you know, God was right there. And
for sure.
I feel like I could talk about that all day long.
Do you feel like the verse, like, he's close to the brokenhearted, was like actively tangible as you walk through it?
Yeah, definitely the Lord being close. And it felt like when we were in the hospital, like, I remember just, you know, looking at each other, and it feels like people are praying for us. Like, you could just
feel it.
And and same thing when he died, I thought that, you know, I had been crying continuously for 3 days. Like, I just could not stop. And there was just this overwhelming peace. And it was also palpable. Like, it just was really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had pretty much had, like, a day with him where the test results weren't all back, but we had this conversation. So we were in the hospital for 3 days, and it was on the night of the second day when the doctor was like, you know, we're going to run tests tonight, but most likely... he phrased it something like, the things that make you human are the first to go. And pretty sure he's not gonna be the same.
So was he on, like, a bunch of tubes, like machines, breathing for him and stuff?
He's on a ventilator.
Yes. Okay.
The daycare provider did CPR until paramedics got there when she discovered that he was not breathing. And then, you know, called 911. They came and they did CPR for 40 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
We're so grateful for that. And they got his heart started again. So, you know, when we saw him, he was technically alive. And even though, you know, it wasn't the same, it was really meaningful to us to get to say goodbye.
And, you know, so we're, like, in the room with the ventilators that buddy was talking about on COVID, like we had just walked through 3 days of just hearing that sound. And the doctor's like, he's like, probably not going to make it. And I had texted our pastor and, like, we need you now. And he came up and we prayed. And as we got done praying, like, we all just kind of looked at each other. And we just, like, felt peace.
Right.
It was insane because Anders is like, we could almost touch his bed.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason why you should feel that.
Yep.
Except for that we serve a God who is living and active.
Yeah. And when scripture is, like, real, that tangible, real, like, a peace that surpasses your human understanding. Like, in the world, they'd be like, how on earth?
Yep.
Like, you're crazy. Yep. It's like, no, it's the Lord. It's the Holy Spirit. And I think that's what I hear most from these kind of just tragic, very worldly tragic scenarios that people have walked through, that it's like when the Bible became like tangible, like when the Lord's presence became tangible, and like the characteristics that he's the Prince of Peace, you know, was with you.
Yeah.
And you felt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also want to get to, I don't know how much, okay, we're at 35 minutes.
Well,
we could camp out here for a while. I just think too, you did have two more children.
Yeah.
And man, well, I just think as a mom, I'm like, yeah, what was it after he passed? You know, what was that? And pregnant again. And
sorry. I wanted to just, you look at I think, well, I just want to say the one thing, because I heard Levi Lesko say this, and it like jarred me when he said it. But we were at his church, and he had a friend who is a country singer who's now going into ministry, who lost his son in a pool accident. And he said, so now we have one in the target of heaven and three in the quiver.
Yeah.
You know, and so how do you move forward with three in the quiver? Knowing that you have one in the target, you know? And so, that thought when he said that, I was like, I've never seen somebody paint that difficulty so beautifully. So what did that launch you guys into? And to Janae's question, just like moving forward with your three that are here, you know?
That is one of the most encouraging things to think about, is like at that time too, when I was really sad and I was like, I should probably be done being sad so I can like go eat lunch or something. You know, I would just think like, well, he's in heaven right now. You know, like what would that be like? And that was enough to like, okay, I can like stop crying. So then, you know, we came home and we still had Linnea, and she's great. And now she's five. And another crazy part of the story that we won't get into is I got pregnant without fertility involvement, just like right after Anders died. And so our son Elias was born in October.
I love that name, by the way. Oh,
thanks. Yeah. And then also we have another son, Abe, who's 3 months old, that spent some time in the freezer with Anders and Linnea.
Yeah.
This is a crazy thought. Anyway.
Yeah.
But he's here now. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. There emotion around like when he was the exact same age? Like when he passed, and was there anxiety?
Or, like, like what fear? Did you have to fight with fear?
Yeah, I have all kinds of weird grief things like that. Right? But it's just a constant like, okay, well, the same thing isn't going to happen, you know, and then just trying to get a little perspective. But it's hard having a little baby now. Like I keep seeing, sometimes I think, oh, he looks like just like Anders, or oh, now he looks like Elias, or, you know, whatever. And just and thinking about like, being out of this stage someday, it makes it feel like, oh, that'll be so much further from, you know, stirring up those memories and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll always have pictures and videos and things, but
So I don't know about the lawn yard thing that's been talked about, but was that a part of this journey?
After Anders died, I quit my teaching job, and then I took a part-time job at our church. And then after, like on my maternity leave with Elias, I had a lot of time on my hands where I was just like sitting, you know, feeding it or yeah. Anyway, then I was like, it'd be nice to do like a little something else. And I came up with this idea for this yard sign rental business called Letter of the Lawn. And I did that, and it was COVID happened.
Did you have to get up at like a crazy time of day to do it?
It depended how many
I followed
sides.
You on Instagram, so watched all that stuff.
Yeah,
like how early would you have to get up to do these like lawn displays?
It would depend, but like really a lot of times early. Around 5.
You'll say it.
Yes, it depended how many there were. But that was so fun to celebrate life and to celebrate other people, and it just is. it was so happy. It was such a fun thing to do. So, I did that. And then once I was pregnant with Abe, it was kind of like, I don't know how I'm going to keep doing this. And luckily, Megan, who was setting up signs for me already, was willing to buy the business. And so now she does it and does an awesome job. So, Michelle booked signs from her.
So fun.
Yeah.
So bring us up to like the latest big transition in your guys' lives.
Yeah. I think like big picture, Rachel, you know, there was a lot of evaluating of like doing time inventories, essentially, of where are we spending our time and where are we investing. And so I've said no to a lot of things that I used to say yes to. You know, Rachel transitioned to Letter of the Lawn and working for the church. And I changed a position within the church within the school. Mm-hmm. And then just really felt like we've had different opportunities, like speaking on podcasts and writing articles and working with Safe Kids worldwide. And so like our story has gotten out a lot. Mm-hmm. And every time there's like a lull, it's like, oh, is that what you were going to use it for, God? Awesome.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're fine with the lull.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the last one. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like totally good with it. When God wants to be done using our story, great.
Yeah.
But we also want to be faithful to it. Mm-hmm. Like you've given us this story and where are we supposed to share it?
Yeah.
And so like just being in prayer about that, about a year ago, a position came open with Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And I sat there and I had volunteered with FCA as a huddle leader in Madden High for 10 years. I knew FCA, I knew the people. And then, you know, this position comes open. They start sharing the vision and the mission to see every coach and every athlete in a growing relationship with Jesus and kind of the vision to spread out staff all across North Dakota to one-on-one relationships with coaches and athletes. And as I sat there, I was like, maybe I think that's supposed to be me. Mm. And I didn't go into that meeting thinking, I'm going to have a position with FCA at the end of this. And it's going to be support raising and all these kinds of things. But I came home and I was like, Rachel, I feel like maybe this FCA thing is something that we're supposed to do. And so the last year, it's been a process of just discerning, like, is this what I'm called to do? Talking to a lot of people, like, what does it look like to be called? It wasn't a position I was looking for, but really felt like God led us there. And so I started on June 1st, did support raising throughout the spring. It was kind of crazy. Did support raising, had a full-time job, and Abe was born all in 100 days.
Yeah, just little things.
You got it. But just to, you have to start with FCA, you need to be fully funded. And my fully funded email came through on day 100, which was the day that God had placed on my heart to like, this should be your deadline.
Wow.
And that's the day the email came through, which was awesome for our family. But I think the even cooler part of it was that God set a date and he provided on that date.
On that date.
Like that was completed on that date. And so that was a really cool testimony to just how God is, when God is behind it and when God is moving in it, just how cool that was.
Right.
Yeah. And on the discouraging days, that's the thing you look back to and go, nope, for that's sure. the altar yes. the Lord gave me that I can,
for sure.
you know, yes. that was him.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, as we talked about earlier, right? Like to just see how God has moved. And I think that's something that we, during infertility, really started to just like, how can we remember where God provides?
Yeah.
Because we've had a lot of opportunities where it's been like, we needed those days. We needed, oh, God provided here. God provided here. This person sent this text at this time and it was encouraging. you know, feeling prayers, and just all of those things are so important to just really know God is going to continue to provide, mm-hmm. even when you're in the valleys. Mm-hmm.
It's so good. I mean, thank you guys for sharing just vulnerably. And I do really think it's going to help people, because there's so many different aspects, you know, people who are maybe feeling called or are walking through infertility or loss or whatever it is. So I just, you don't need it, but I mean, what our affirmation is like, man, this is impactful, you know? Yeah. And I know the crew sitting here has been just like on the edge of their seats listening too, you know? Yeah. And so thank you for being willing to share and encourage other people with your story.
Yeah, I would say I'm probably most encouraged by how you just hear the Lord and your mm-hmm. heart of surrender. Like, as you guys talked, I'm like, these people are surrendered to Jesus Christ. Like, you can just hear it and you see it in your lives, and mm-hmm. all credit to him with whatever you walk through, whether mm-hmm. it's a great, you know, business or FCA or grief and like unimaginable loss. And that's what I'm just walking away encouraged by, just your heart to stay surrendered to him and obedient, and just very evident. I don't know you that well. I feel like I literally just met you. But I love that about the body of Christ, right? Yeah. Is that
we have something
like
in
we
common.
Spur one another on mm-hmm. in that. And I'm spurred on. I'm like grieved for you in that, but like spurred on in my faith to surrender more to mm-hmm. Jesus. And so excited for this new journey that you guys are very freshly on, even with adding a new baby and a new journey mm-hmm. of your role in FCA, and truly really excited for what God's going to do with that and in your guys' family and everything.
Is there anything people can do to partner with what you're doing with FCA? I mean, if they're hearing this and they want to be supportive in some way, how can they partner with you?
Yeah. My contact info is everything's kind of found at fcand.org. There's like a meet the team tab, and they could reach out, email, contact.
Can they give? It's all there. Or is all
certainly
the giving done?
They can give. No,
okay, so there's fully definitely funded, but they
fully
can still
funded
give.
For year one, right?
Yeah.
With it's pretty incredible. Just see how God worked through people that just reached out and were like, we want to get you started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's definitely continued support raising that will
That's cool.
continue to happen. FCAND.org gets to our kind of team page. And
cool.
And
we can put the link in the show notes too.
Sure.
That's why we got Naomi. She's
Excellent.
Got it.
Yep. Excellent.
She's great.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, man, again, thank you guys for sharing. If you want to be supportive of FCA and the work they're doing with coaches or with student athletes, then check out the website that Ryan mentioned and give. I think Legacy Makers is getting in with what you guys are doing. Sure. And if we're not, we will.
But no, you are.
So to our Evangel family, we're going to be invested supporting. In some way.
Yeah.
But encourage you to if you've been inspired and they've sown something into your heart, let me encourage you to sow something back into their lives.
I think too, like if you know an athlete, like I was saved at cross training, which is a Christian basketball camp.
Sure.
Like you can use sports to expand the gospel. I love that.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely.
And so I'm like, I'm all for that. Yeah. I'm like, let's reach those athletes. If you, even if you know an athlete that would like needs the hope of Jesus, like come on, get behind it. But also if you know someone walking through what you guys walk through and would be encouraged from this conversation, like please share it with them. Share it with those that maybe are walking through grief or loss, and just your testimony is powerful. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. If this episode has been an encouragement to you, or you know somebody that would benefit from hearing these words of God's faithfulness and his help and just walking through different journeys of life, then share it with them, subscribe so you catch every episode, and we'll carry on in season 4 talking about relationships. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.